Listen to words written almost 20 years ago. We face a spiritual crisis. We are overworked, stressed out, and chronically neglecting basic disciplines of spiritual growth and family nurture. The problem is personal, but its causes and effects are social and economic. On average, more family members, parents and children, are working outside the home than 20 years ago. Their absence, exhaustion, and anxiety about money for lifestyles takes a toll on the family. The logic of consumption drives young and old to perpetual dissatisfaction, all the while our spirits hunger for wholeness. These words were written about 20 years ago. Just the other day, I found some written, well, just a couple years ago. There are now more two-income households in America than at any time in history. As a result, children are being shuffled from one thing to the next at breakneck speed. They are being told to do this or do that, and vice versa. Families struggle to eat dinner together. 60 years ago, the average dinner time was 90 minutes. Today, it's less than 12. Higher divorce rates exacerbate this reality. The harder we work, the less space there seems for parent and child to be present with each other. Why is this? Well, it's all about paying for the best sports programs, schools, household comforts. We are in the middle of a spiritual crisis. Driven by our anxieties and our ambitions, we have let work become a cruel taskmaster and have surrendered the very disciplines that would keep us free. But there may be a way out. And it might start for us with keeping the Sabbath. Now, over the past couple weeks, we've been exploring the biblical practice of Sabbath keeping. 2 weeks ago, we talked about Sabbath as a means of preserving our freedom. Last week, we talked about Sabbath as imitating God. Sabbath is about rest. And Sabbath is about grace. We can rest. Why? Well, because God has provided enough. But Sabbath and that principle of grace that underlies it is not simply about our own personal refreshment. It's not just about us. There are also social implications of Sabbath. Our practice of Sabbath is meant to bless the world around us. And we see that in the commandment. Let me read again from the second giving of the Ten Commandments found in Deuteronomy. Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor any foreigners residing in your towns, so that your male and female servants may rest as you do. Now, I don't know if you found it interesting that rest was also commanded for the animals. It's sort of like a doubling down on the command. I mean, rest for beasts of burden refreshed the animals, but it also basically shut down agriculture work. I mean, it was effectively turning off the machines and hanging up a closed sign on the factory door. If the animals couldn't work, neither could the laborers. Sabbath, as you can see in the commandments themselves, those Ten Commandments, is for blessing others. But while the commandment offers rest to others, true Sabbath keeping, I think, goes much further. And we heard that in today's reading from Deuteronomy. It talks about a Sabbath year where debts are forgiven. That's interesting. If you haven't been one who's sort of read through all the Old Testament, there wasn't just a Sabbath day, right? There was a Sabbath year. At the end of every 7 years, there was a canceling of debts. Every creditor would cancel any loan they had made to a fellow Israelite. But then it's not just a Sabbath year. Like, take 7 Sabbath years, you get to what's called the year of Jubilee. And that was a time when family property was restored. I mean, I grew up in the prairies, and I can see now how much property accumulates, right? Families sell off, or they lose their property to the banks, or what have you. And what happens over a period of years? Ancestral land is lost, right? Well, in the nation of Israel, 50 years, it would go back. Why? The people would know that they were all sort of tenants of God, but so there would be a sort of equality built into the system. So there are ethical concerns that go beyond rest that are built into Sabbath. And they're at the root of the biblical Sabbath traditions. I think what's clear, though, is Sabbath is not just for ourselves. The principle of God's grace shown in Sabbath is also a call to bless others, to practice forgiveness, to practice generosity. If we look again at that Old Testament reading that Amy read for us, what does it say? If anyone is poor among your fellow Israelites in any of the towns the Lord your God is giving you, do not be hard-hearted or tight-fisted toward them. Rather, be open-handed, freely lending them whatever they need. Give generously and do so without a grudging heart. So what have I just done? I've ramped up Sabbath keeping, right? You're almost thinking about keeping it last week, and now I've added this on, and you're thinking, holy smokes, that's way too hard, right? That's way too hard. It's hard for us, right? I mean, when you throw in the financial side of things, the reason why most of us don't keep Sabbath is a concern about the finances. We work too much because we're trying to maintain costly lifestyles. And then giving some of those resources away, just contemplating that, well, that's undermining our ability to maintain those lifestyles we're working so hard to achieve, right? And so we hear this call to Scripture to be generous, and our first thought is, well, isn't that going to impoverish me? Well, a couple of weeks ago, I ran across an article where the writer decided to say yes to every request for money, and in particular, he was thinking about the panhandlers he encounters on the streets. He decided to say yes every time someone asked him for money and to keep a running tally. He wanted to see how much it would cost him to be open-handed. Any ideas of how much it cost him? About $150 in 1 year. $150. Not a lot of cash for most of us. I mean, I'm sure he spent more on coffee at the Tim Hortons drive-thru during the year than tending to those requests from the poor. Won't such generosity impoverish me, we ask ourselves? Maybe we have to tighten up a bit. But the Sabbath's call to generosity and forgiveness invites us to trust that even as we share, the Lord will provide. The Lord will provide what we need. Yeah. Waiting for requests is sometimes not just our only call. Sometimes the call is to be proactive in that. But I think that concern about getting impoverished, right, by following this commandment to generosity is not our only concern. I think part of us also wonders in the back of our brain, like, will it make a difference, right? We see the need around us. It's so great. Whether we're sponsoring children or making donations to the food bank, will we make a dent in poverty in our city of Kamloops or across the world? Is that even possible? Well, I think I can say with some assurance that it won't, okay? It won't. It won't make a large dent in these problems. But it's interesting. I mean, the passage says there will always be poor people in the land. And then it continues, therefore, I command you to be open-handed. The passage isn't concerned about whether we can resolve all these problems. The passage is concerned that nonetheless, even if we can't solve world hunger, even if we can't end the need, that we still are helping others. But I don't think that's still our biggest objection. I still don't think that's our biggest objection to the kind of grace and generosity that's being talked about in these passages. I think the biggest objection is, do these people really deserve it? Right? I mean, the money's in my wallet. Does that person over there deserve having some of it? Get to know those who live close to the streets, and you'll likely observe unwise decisions and destructive patterns of behavior. Many people are in these situations because they're their own worst enemies. So should we support those who have frittered away opportunities and blown their third, fourth, and fifth chances? Why not simply enjoy those resources ourselves? I mean, especially since we have proven ourselves to be the better managers anyhow. Right? In our hands, it'll go a lot further. Well, to address this sort of objection, you need to read that New Testament reading that I told you to read on your own, but the one that we shared together as the children's story, the parable of the two sons. Well, it's true that the one son has been a much better manager than the other. The greater truth of the story is that the wealth and opportunity that they both enjoyed came from their father. Right? Neither of the brothers were self-made. Sabbath, I think, encourages us all to realize that we have received grace from outside of ourselves. And because we are all recipients of God's kindness, we can be generous with others. This past Wednesday, I drove to Vernon to meet up with a colleague who's a chaplain at the University of Kelowna. You might know him, Todd Statham. He spoke at my induction here. We met at some independent all-day breakfast joint the block off downtown. It was one of three choices, right? The trendy choice, the sort of the blue-collar choice, or, you know, the choice, like the fast food choice. Well, we chose the blue-collar choice. And we haven't met up for a while, and we had lots to talk about, so we weren't paying close attention to what was going on around us. So at the end of the meal, we were surprised to be told that someone who had been sitting across from us picked up our bill. It's never happened to me. I mean, randomly, right? Like, I've had generous benefactors pay for the meal that I've enjoyed with them, but for someone who doesn't know us, it's really odd. I mean, someone in the restaurant, right, off of downtown, kind of blue-collared, decide to pay the tab for two decently dressed men having a meal there. They didn't subject us to an interview about whether or not we might be deserving, right? Interesting. Like, and the fact that they just did it, I mean, like, I don't know, sometimes it might cross our minds, but how many of us won't give a couple bucks to someone who asks for spare change, lest, and I'm not talking about our concerns that they spend it in wrong ways, lest we run out of money, right? The concern is we're not going to have that money in our own pocket. And here someone put 30 bucks on the table. What seems clear to me, and like, if they were trying to mess with someone's mind, they did it, right? Because I thought about that all the way home. What's clear to me is that they simply wanted to be a blessing. They were trusting that their generosity would somehow bring greater goodness into the world. Makes me wonder what in their life has inspired such lavish generosity. And it made me start thinking about, well, what do I have to be grateful for? And so I printed up these little slips. I invite you to look in your bulletin. Pull it out right now. Someone handed me this to me. Might have been my daughter. Filled it out saying, today I am grateful for that friends could come over. Right? For church. and for a sleepover she's having tonight. You know, what are you grateful for? Fill it out right now. Let's take a moment here. If you can't think of three things, we can go out for coffee. We'll do some blue sky thinking. Not at the same time. Take a look at that list now. Take a look at that list. God has blessed you. God has blessed you. God has decided to bless the world. How might you practice the Sabbath and be a blessing too? Amen.